I should have just went up the middle. Whew. Happy Sabbath. Happy Sabbath. At the feast, it was Happy Feast. And everyone would say, Happy Feast. Well, it's good to be back. It's good to be on the Sabbath day. Welcome back, everybody, from what I am sure was your best feast ever. I know for me, personally, it was. And I wonder how each year it gets better than the year before. Study, messages, and fellowship was all just spot on this year. I took Mr. Cordyue's advice and really read the law this year. And it felt so refreshing and inspiring to read the passages in Leviticus. I have to admit, I hadn't done that really before and really just dove into it. It was inspiring. It all inspired me. I feel a fire in my belly after coming back, and it's not because of the usual, which is hot sauce. So, are you energized? Are you ready? Are you ready? Ready for what? You're probably asking yourself that question, hoping I'll get to the answer. Are you ready to go to work? And I know it's the Sabbath, so I'm not talking about servile work that we're not supposed to do, because today we're supposed to rest. So what kind of work am I talking about? I've meditated a lot about the feast, the messages and the feelings the holy days this year from Passover to the last day has made on me and what it's meant to me. And I've heard the messages deep inside me, and while I was at the feast, there was one particular set of verses that struck me. The Bible is so wonderful. It's not only a book of the past, it's a history book. But it tells us about the future. And it also tells us about today. The book foretells things to come while illustrating to us today our mindset and our struggles every day that we face in the lives of people that have long since passed, men and women. It's a beautiful living book. So this set of verses that I've read and that affected me so much during the feast, I have read, many times. I've heard it in sermons and sermonettes many times. But for some reason, this time it affected me a little bit differently. So what is it, and what is this work I'm speaking of? Well, first let me tell you a story. And tell me if you've heard this one before. In the future, Satan will be bound for 1,000 years. We've heard that one over and over again so many times. Yes, this sounds familiar. We have talked about this often. Jesus Christ shall rule in peace. All nations, families, and peoples will come to Jerusalem to celebrate the feast, as mentioned in Zechariah 14. Ezekiel 36, verses 10 through 11, foretells of a population explosion during that 1,000 years. We will be priests of God during this time period, as noted in Revelations 20. Verses 4 through 6. Our work will be to teach. I can't think of anything more important to do than to share how wonderful, important, and fulfilling God's way of life is. We will help influence and teach our brothers and sisters about God's way without Satan's influence. Can you imagine what that's going to be like? I cannot even fathom how challenging and rewarding this time and this task will be. All people will have gone through so much, seen so many horrible, horrible things, and experienced so many horrible things up to this point. All the evils of the world, magnified at the end times, would haunt anyone. I cannot even wrap my head around this task. I had a conversation before the feast, a few Sabbaths or so before the feast, with a couple of the cords that I have in Canton. And the question was broached, why, if we follow God's commandments and His holy days and we practice His ways, why are we set with so many trials and issues just like everybody else? Why do we suffer so much? And other than when it says in the Bible about if they persecuted me, speaking of Jesus, they persecuted me, they're going to persecute you. But why? And I think we came up with some different topics that day. Well, to build character, and well, you know, eventually we're going to have a pretty important position in God's family, and to be a part of the God family, you would want to make sure that we're well tested. But I don't think that we hit upon the reason good enough that day. Because this time period in the future will be the single most intense job I can ever imagine. And are you ready to teach these folks, these people that have gone through so much, who had seen so many horrible things? Have you truly spent the time to sit and meditate about that? We're not just talking about a peaceful time where Christ's going to be here and then we're all going to go to the mountain and we're all going to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles, but these folks have seen all those horrible things that existed during that time period. You cannot imagine how their brains are going to be so messed up, how their emotions are going to be so distraught. This is a very important time. The Bible tells us that the kings of old had to write their own copy of the Bible and read it daily to govern wisely. Have you written your Bible? Well, it's written that they did this it is written that they did this, so do you think as future kings and priests maybe we should do it as well? Just a question to ponder. I'm not saying anyone has to. But if they did it in old times and they led people and it was important, and although I know any one of us could buy one of these, is it important to us today? We'll also help. Not only will we be teaching in the millennium, but we'll also help in the second resurrection, the Great White Throne Judgment time period, to educate those who died not knowing Jesus. In Isaiah 65, verses 17 through 25, it speaks of a time when people will live to a ripe old age, when all will have security and property to produce. No one shall fear of things being taken away. People will rejoice and cry no more. We often think about that verse, or I do, and I'm like, oh, that's nice. It would be nice not to have some pains. But as I was driving here today to church, and I stopped at this intersection in Washington on my way, and there was this woman off to the left of me, and she was standing next to a very large display of flowers, and I could see that there were small stuffed animals. And she was standing there, and her head was down, and she had her arms on her waist, and she was just staring down at this. She was thinking intently, and I'm sure she was grieving. And then she would kneel down on one knee and slowly, and she would touch one of those stuffed animals, and she would just move it just so. And then she'd stand back up as I was waiting, and she'd look down at it again, and her head was just down, and then she'd do it one more time. I know what happened at that intersection. I know the pain it caused in my community, what happened that day. And I cried on the way here today. There will not be a time like that again. We have all had pains. We've all had sorrows. But this part is important to me. There will be no more crying. And there will be no more pain. Can you imagine? Have you meditated on this? According to the article on the UCG website entitled, "What is the meaning of the 100 years mentioned in Isaiah 65:20?" There are three potential interpretations of this verse. Two deal with the time during the Great White Throne Judgment, and one of which is representing a time in that millennium. By this time, we have had some incredible experiences before we, I believe, help teach them too. By teaching in the millennium, we'll have dealt with some fairly substantial issues that people will have. Will we be helping then during that time period? I assume we will still deal with the residue of the previous life's experiences during the teaching period. But how well do we do? How well did we teach during the millennium? I don't have any answers about after the Great White Throne Judgment, but there is a quite clear report card after the 1,000-year time frame. This report card is what has touched me the most. That report card is talking about in Revelation 20, if you'll turn there. Revelation 20. Verses 7 through 8. And when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth. What touched me here is we have just taught for 1,000 years. We have cried, probably. We've counseled. Not just strangers, but perhaps wives that were never in the church and that lived through that great tribulation. Children, our own perhaps. Fathers, mothers, neighbors, and friends. And during that 1,000-year time period, they will also become like brothers and sisters and family and friends. What affected me was that Gog and Magog to gather the four corners of the earth, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. The people that we taught, instructed, and dealt with for 1,000 years will, some will still, and many, still defy God and still come up against Jerusalem at that time period. How is it possible? I understand that the mind of the flesh is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God. Neither indeed can it be, according to Romans 8:7. How after 1,000 years with Christ on earth and everyone learning and following God's perfect plan could this happen? How could they celebrate the feast with us as we do? The atonement, trumpets, Pentecost, Passover, unleavened bread, and enjoy it like we do, I would hope, and learn the beauty of the commandments, and still do this. I mentioned my concern with a very smart young man during the feast. I thought we need to try harder, was my opinion. And his opinion was, he said, it is written, so it will be. It's very important. It is written, therefore it will be. I remember Nineveh and God's proclamation against the wicked city. Let's look at Jonah 3. Chapter 3, verses 1 through 10. Jonah preached in Nineveh over a 3-day period because the city was so great. And in verse 4, let's pick it up. And Jonah began to enter into the city a day's journey. And he cried and said, yet 40 days and Nineveh will be overthrown. It will be overthrown. Not maybe or potentially. It will be. This was a proclamation from God and it would happen. There was no question. Let's continue reading Jonah 3, 5 through 10. The Ninevites believed God. A fast was proclaimed, and all of them, from the greatest to the least, put on sackcloth. When Jonah's warning reached the king of Nineveh, he rose from his throne, took off his royal robes, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat down in the dust. This is a proclamation he issued in Nineveh. By the decree of the king and his nobles, do not let people or animals, herds or flocks, taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink, but let people and animals be covered with sackcloth. Let everyone call urgently on God. Let them give up their evil ways and their violence. Who knows? God may yet relent and with compassion turn from his fierce anger so that we will not perish. And then in verse 10, when God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he relented and did not bring on them the destruction he had threatened. It is written, and it shall be. God changed his mind. What had it been proclaimed and written changed? What it says to me is, just to me, is we need to try harder. I need to try harder. We need to each of us take this work very seriously. Because it is not only important for us to be in God's kingdom, but each of us have a very important task in the future to teach our brothers and sisters, our wives and husbands, our friends and neighbors, our lost loved ones, and etc. in the future. We know what is written about the end of the millennium, but I have to imagine we can have an impact on this in some fashion. I do not know if we can. I do not have any verses that specifically tell me we can change Revelation 20, verses 7 through 8. Not one. But I know for me it stuck a fire in my gut. This is my desire to recommit myself to study, to teaching up here, and learning more every day. This is my desire to change. I hope to inspire you to dig deeper, to pray more passionately, and to seek God more diligently. Set time daily in your calendar for study instead of just trying to get it at the end of the day or maybe sometime tomorrow. When do you fast? Do you have a set time that you do it, or do you mark it in a calendar? Make it a priority. Purposely set it time aside. Do you do the same for prayer? Building cords in the church to strengthen yourself? When I was driving home, I was talking to a friend of mine that used to go to church when I went to church and then left and then came back, and talking to him about his feast as I was driving home by myself. And we were talking about the end time and how soon that may happen. He didn't think it was going to happen anytime soon. Well, I don't know. He had his military background, and he thought, well, things just aren't ready. It won't be anytime soon, maybe 10 years or so. Maybe it will. Maybe it's next week. Maybe it's a month. Maybe it's 10 years or next generation. I don't know. It always seems like it's close. But it doesn't matter. Be ready for that final exam. And so my last question to you is, so are you ready? Are you ready to teach the future?